Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things, the podcast after Weird Things, where we talk about things. I'm joined by Brian Brushwood. Andrew Main.
That's the
other guy is Justin Robert Young.
Mahoy.
How's that for an intro, guys?
It's great.
So we're going to talk. I think we'll start off with a discussion of Split, but also the fact that like we're in this really very interesting era where Blumhouse, the production company, which does a lot of this, you know, small budget horror, and it's not really micro budget, but it's, you know, a couple million dollar picks. They have like a very interesting strategy, and what they do is they look for directors who have experience directing, people who may have been big names, people who've done stuff and maybe have some experience in doing directing, writing, whatever. Give them a lot more control over a project. They get a lot smaller money. Like I think, you know, the budget for Split was, let's pull this up on Box. It's got to be like $8 million or something like that. It was not a lot of money. And part of what they'll do is they will take these projects, develop them, and then decide it was a $9 million budget. Then decide how much marketing dollars or whatever they want to put into it. And they've had other projects I've heard that just sort of sit on the shelves and do that. But they work with established directors who they know have had a lot of experience, are capable of, you know, delivering a film, and give them, you know, a little more freedom. And for directors, sometimes it's a very attractive opportunity. You're not doing a bigger budget movie, but when you do a bigger budget movie, you have so many more people who want to weigh in and tell you what you can and cannot do. And sometimes you lose a sense of it doesn't feel like it's your project, yet the decisions they make affect you, and you can find yourself in a big project and executives insisting on stuff that you can't be vocal, and you never hear the side. I almost never hear the side of it when they talk about it, where they're like, they're not going to tell you like, the studio, if you're in a position of power, you'll say this, or if you're outside, you'll say it, but you're still working in the system. You're not going to say, no, studio made me cast this actor. He was horrible, didn't remember his lines. It took us forever to do it. They made us use the script, which I said we had problems with it, but you know, the writer was a friend of the exec who greenlit us or whatever. You don't hear that, and that happens a lot in big projects. So the Blumhouse models, let's take people, let's give them more control, more freedom to go do this because the risk is much lower because the, you know, payoff is great. So right now, Split is what we're going to talk about. Was made for $9 million. Its domestic gross right now is $112 million, which, you know, obviously studio doesn't get all of it, gets roughly half of that, but also it's a good indication of what it'll do in home video and all that. It's going to have probably a 10-to-1 earnings ratio, you know, cute, probably by the end of it, which is great. Really, really great success. And it's directed by M. Night Shyamalan, who started off, you know, with, you know, in the 90s with, you know, a great, you know, this is a guy did Sixth Sense, which was huge, huge successful film. He did other films like I really enjoyed, like I like Signs even more in that moment. I loved Unbreakable was one of my favorite films that he did. And then he kind of got into this sort of what's the twist going to be kind of thing. And that made it where sometimes a twist is meant to reframe the entire movie property or the entire movie, which I think was sort of a problem with things like The Village and stuff, because if you knew what the twist was going in or whatever, it's just kind of a dull movie about people in a village. Now he has Split when he's doing it with Blumhouse. I think it's his second project he did with him. I believe he did
the creepy grandparents movie,
The Visit,
right?
Yeah,
which was supposed to be pretty good, right?
Yeah, I've heard good things about that. So, and that did The Visit at a domestic $65 million gross, and looking up the stats on this stuff. So, he wrote and directed, and that was a Blumhouse project too. So now he seems to be thriving really, really well there. Worldwide, $100 million gross, and then, you know, that was a movie with a $5 million budget. So, you know, he seems to have found his groove in doing these kinds of projects. So we're going to do a very spoilery discussion of Split.
Yeah. But before we move into spoiler territory, this will probably be the last opportunity for you to pull the ripcord and leave. Know this. I saw Split today because Jeff Cannata tweeted, you know, do yourself a favor. Don't read anything about the Split. Don't know anything about Split. Just go. Just go and you'll be delighted for very good reasons. And so I did. But you had the inverse experience. So
Now
is the chance to rip the cord. From here on out, it's only going to get more spoilery.
Well, we won't spoil it. I would just say, let me just make this clear. The reason, Justin, you saw it because I told you to see it, right?
Well, okay. Because you told me the spoiler.
Yeah, I found out whether I was not going to see it. I was nobody I knew was like, oh, you got to go see this thing, whatever. So I'm like, and I read this thing like, oh, here, and like read a caption says this, knowing the spoiler makes it better. I'm like, huh, all right, I'll read this because I had nothing invested. I wasn't planning to see it. I read it. And then I'm like, oh, now I want to see this. Because, you know, my fear of what a traditional M. Night Shyamalan spoiler would be, it wasn't that case, you know, of like, you know, of something like The Village, you know. And so once I read that spoiler, I'm like, oh, well, now you've piqued my interest now. So, and then I saw it, and that's the only reason I saw it was that. And then I came out and told Justin, you need to go see this because it's, and I'll tell you what the spoiler is because he has the same position as me. And then that was motivated you.
Yeah, I would not have gone to see it if I didn't if Andrew hadn't told me it. Although, let me just say
that we're going to tell you if you're comfortable hearing what the spoiler is, we will tell you the spoiler of it. And it's not a spoiler kind of thing. And I'll be clear like that. A spoiler is it's a cool thing that happens. If you're like, hey guys, convince me I'm going to go see it. But if you're like, all right, tell me what this thing is, because it will either be really cool or you'll be like, yeah, and.
So if I had done what Jeff Cannata implored the world to do and what you indeed did, Brian, this would have been my experience. Went to the theater, got my ticket. I scanned it on the phone for the guy. The guy goes, oh, I think you're the first person to go see it. I'm like, cool. It's like, do you like M. Night Shyamalan movies? And I'm like, yeah, kind of. More the older ones than the newer ones. And he's like, oh, do you like Unbreakable? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, well, you better make sure you stay till the end.
Oh, God. Did that actually happen?
Literally happened. And I almost like, I'm like, I want to get you fired. You're a piece of garbage. It's like, I hate you.
It's like,
I'm like, I'm glad that I knew this going in. But like you almost like it's like somebody blew peanut dust in my face and was like, I hope you don't have an allergy.
Yeah, right. It's like, good thing I happen to go to the movies in my spoiler proof armor since you're jabbing spoilers in my chest. Wow.
So, but I understand. I don't agree with what, like, I took my friend Adam Franklin to go see it. And Adam is a big film guy. And I said, Adam, you want to go see it? I said, well, have you seen it? Like, yeah. I said, you know, there's a spoiler I can tell you that may make you want to, like, nope, don't tell me I'm going to see it. I'm like, cool. You're going to see it. That's good. I would only use this to get you to see it. And so the spoiler is, it doesn't affect what happens in the movie itself. It's just at the end of the movie. We can just talk whatever. At the end of the movie, like the movie, the particular protagonist manages to get away. The bad guy gets away, and then we cut to a diner, and there's the news report is playing and talking about this, you know, the serial killer, the multiple personality character, and the camera pulls across there, and somebody says, "Oh, that reminds me of that. What was that other killer? That serial killer guy?" And then the camera moves over, and there is David Dunn, a.k.a. Bruce Willis, with his Dunn written on his jacket.
On his chest, you know? Just in case you were wondering, is it really the same
music
character?
And the music started before, like the Unbreakable music started before. And like as soon as the music started playing, I watched my friend's Adam, his ears just perk up, right? And he's just leaning in, watching this intently. And then the music, it's amazing. It was great to watch his experience. And then, you know, what was the other guy called? They pan over and they go, Bruce Willis goes, they called him Mr. Glass. And Adam literally loses his SH*T, jumps up, throws his hat down, excited. He's like loving it because he loves Unbreakable. He's like, oh my God. And we watched him just like somebody watching a David Blaine magic trick.
Yes.
He just blew up like this and that. And I'm like, it was worth it just to see his reaction to it.
It was great. It was great, great, great. And what was fascinating is that I saw it with my brother and I in a perfect world, I would go in not even knowing that there was something to expect at the end, some kind of twist or whatever, right? But you see, M. Night Shyamalan is sort of his brand, so you're kind of on guard, right? Mm-hmm. They do a great job in this movie from beginning to end of setting up, you know, the emerging strangeness of this disassociative personality disorder. What is it? DID or identity disorder. But like you spend the entire movie asking questions, and one of those very valid questions is, wow, this protagonist chick who we're rooting for to escape the situation, she clearly had an abusive childhood, and she clearly was in a tough spot. You know, it seems like as the show got more and more supernatural-ish, and it only nibbles at the edges and just gets weirder and weirder, and you start to think, well, I mean, this is a psychological thriller. It's not like he's actually going to have superpowers. And then as you see what looks like superpowers being demonstrated, then it just pushed me harder and harder to, okay, the big twist is that she's the 24th personality. This is all in her mind. She's the one that's broken and damaged. And then instead, the big screw you, the monstrous and genuinely surprising twist to me is, nope, the twist is there's literally no twist. Everything happened exactly the way you saw it. And I was like, wow, what a really great twist. The guy really did develop superpowers with his multiple personality. He really is a menace and he really is out there. And then, you know, just the little tip of the hat with the wink in the eye is the, also, by the way, same universe as Unbreakable.
It was Samuel Jackson showing up in, you know, Iron Man. That's what it was.
Yeah, yes.
And it's that. That's like, yeah, no, there's more to come, folks. And that was the idea of like, guess what? This is a universe. And I was trying to figure out like, if I didn't know, would I have figured it out or when would I have started to? And I think I'm such a big Unbreakable fan. And like the fact that the train accident and all that was such a major part of this of like, oh yeah, when my father died in the train accident.
I had a fleeting thought. When I forgot all about this. When the Horde walks onto that Amtrak train, there was like this fleeting like, oh, what if this destroyed the train with David Dunn in it or whatever? And then it just evaporated because that made no sense. It was like, you know, it's just a train. But instead, oh my God, you know what? I wonder how many parallels that had to have been intentional, that the train was his galvanizing moment. He went to get on the train to become the Beast.
Have you seen the movie poster lineup?
I have. I intentionally was not looking at a lot of them. Can we take a look at those? Because I was trying to be spoiler free. But I'll tell you this much: right up until the end, up until that moment when he's pulling the bars apart, about to get the girl. Oh my gosh! Look at that.
So the mirror. The mirror breaks. They both have a mirror break motif on the.
Oh,
movies.
but they match.
Well,
no, not
quite.
Really.
Two of them line up at a very.
Yeah, they will. They will match when they released as a two DVD set, though. I guarantee you. But my point is
the idea the idea is that they kind of lead up to the idea that Kevin's father left on a train. And then he buys the flowers and leaves them as if it were his gravesite, you know?
Yeah.
So the idea that his father died on the train is now there.
Shoot. So that is on the idea is that his dad died on the same train as.
Yeah. No, his David dad. Dunn. Yeah. Wow. Mr. Glass made him and
he made
David
the Horde
Dunn.
As well.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I didn't piece that
together.
By way
of creating that train accident, which was the big revelation in Unbreakable, was that Mr. Glass was trying to pull forth into society these super creatures.
Did you guys catch some of the what I assume had to have been deliberately strange phrasing that the girls used with each other when they first wake up imprisoned? And there's this kind of odd consensus they're seeking where it's just like, hey, are you with it? Are you one of us or not? Like there were some seeds planted very, very early in the beginning of the movie that, that really put me on guard thinking, yeah, these girls might not be what they seen, which is what made it so profound when there was definitely that moment like, nope, everything is exactly what it looked like.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys catch that?
My fear, if I heard people talking about like, oh, a twist, there was a and the name escapes me right now. There was a movie about like these people trapped in this diner or this restaurant trying to get out in a snowstorm. And it all turned out that it's like in the mind of this one schizophrenic guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so it was a good movie, but I was so afraid.
Is that 13
or that, Shutter Island or room, Identity
room 13 or something? No, it's John Cusack.
Yeah,
I think that was Identity. Yeah.
Is that what?
Maybe Identity.
Identity.
Is that Identity? Oh, okay.
If I'm remembering.
Yeah, and I thought, like, I didn't think Shutter Island was a very satisfying movie at all, because you're kind of like, oh, this is all, we have, it's unreliable narrator, is this, it's probably, he's probably nuts, you know, whatever. It wasn't as fulfilling, but yeah, I thought Identity, I thought was a solid, but I was just afraid we were going to, it was like, all right, well, what's the Shyamalan twist going to be on that? But instead, it, you know, like Brian, as you pointed out, you know, it wasn't, hey, it's all in your head. It's like, no, it's not in your head. And it's even more, you know, visceral than that, which I really, really dug. I thought some of the writing was ham-fisted, you know, like, oh, that you can climb up walls by surface tension. And we get this explanation. And then when he's – James McAvoy's running and the two security guards are like, was that some kind of animal? I'm like, no, it's Professor X.
Oh, no. It was, don't worry. It's just an animal. They're sure. They're sure that it's an animal that's running by in his underwear.
Well, and it was very oddly specific when the psychologist is just like, I know, I've heard you talk about this mysterious beast that's super strong and can stop bullets and climb walls, but that's just a fantasy. That can't possibly happen.
Yeah. there are some moments, a few moments like that, and then, you know, and then that the two women watching The Price is Right, and you're like, well, he put her, that older woman, there so there'd be a worse actor than him.
you got to spin the wheel this way. But they do a good job of not making it so disjointed that you get annoyed, but disjointed enough that you just don't know what the pieces are you're looking at, right? And that they really do all kind of connect right at the end.
It's schlock, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that in a very, very fun way. It's James McAvoy doing big, silly voices and characters, some of them better than others. And the fact that there is some crappy acting and there's some dialogue that's like just kind of a gigantic neon sign for things that it's going to want permission for later in the movie is fine, because I think it has that general tone. And I think it was refreshing to me, because I think it's M. Night Shyamalan indulging some of the elements that I liked about him when I liked his movies more, which is, hey, wouldn't this be cool, as opposed to, aren't I clever?
So the question, would you guys had the experience of knowing what it was going into it. I did not. And there was that brief moment before that ending twist where I thought, they were right. I'm glad I saw this not knowing anything. Really good movie. That was really fun. I was left guessing all the way till the end. And then obviously, you know, that transformative, like, no, Unbreakable was a hero's origin story. This is a supervillain's origin story. That was fantastic. But I thought I assume I would still like it just as much had I not seen that end. Do you guys feel like, how necessary was that end to you guys liking it?
It's what got me into the theater.
Well, yeah. Yes, but that is not the defining characteristic of how good a movie is what gets you into the theater.
It made me grade it on a curve, because it made me forgive some of the sort of sillier sort of writing moments and stuff into it. And it also, the fact that I would be, cause I know what I'd be sitting there going, all right, I guess it's a thing, you know, people dying in train accidents is part of what he does. I'd be like, why is he revisiting this? I would be a little bit confused. I know I would have left it a little confused as to why, you know, again, like I watched Unbreakable probably like 2 weeks before I knew this was even related to that. Cause I just said, it's a movie I got to go back and watch again. So, I don't know. I thought parts of it that sort of drove me nuts was like, you know, that like the abuse situation earlier where she's trying to use the shotgun and she finds herself again with the shotgun, and now she has, it was like too similar to conveniently enough, we got the same kind of gun right for you right now. That, and there was other parts that just kind of got to me a little, but there were other parts I thought were great. Like the abduction part at the very beginning of the mall, you know, with, you know, I thought that was really great. You know, I'm like, McAvoy sits in the car, and I'm like, man, Professor X has gotten very aggressive in his recruitment technique.
Hey, so this is interesting. You knew that was ham-fisted direction because with the two shotgun scenes being just right there and being the exact same thing. I took that as evidence. The entire time it's happening, I'm like, oh, yeah, no, of course this is happening in her mind, because this is exactly what happened before. Now she's just reliving it in this different way. So that's interesting, because I didn't, while it was happening, because I was suspecting that it was all in her mind, I did not perceive that as lazy storytelling. I thought mm-hmm. that was just, you know, a different story.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's probably the biggest difference, is that based on the first trailer I saw for it, I assumed that this was a story where multiple personality disorder person gets superpowers. You know, because the first trailer was him, and even the poster, there's a poster for it that's like, you know, Kevin has personalities, yada, yada, yada. And like, it's a bunch of regular people and then one gigantic monster person or whatever. So that's what I assumed it was. So there was never really a moment. There were moments in the movie where I was like, wait a minute, is she, because we hear at the beginning, oh, she runs away a lot, yada, yada, yada. Like, and based on the beginning where she hesitates, I didn't know whether or not she was a part, not physically like in the mind of anybody, but if she was in cahoots with Kevin or one of his personalities, then that was going to be a revelation. But I never assumed that they were all together. Although at the same time, Andrew and I had conversations where we were relieved that that was not the case. So that, you know, in all fairness, might have colored my thoughts on it. But from the trailer, I did not think that this was going to be an all in the mind kind of thing.
I would say that, and part of, I know I would have probably judged, I'd be still thinking more about McAvoy's characters, because like the characters were, there were like, it felt like there were three characters and we're told they're 24, and the kid like doing like acting, trying to portray a child is very hard. And he portrayed a child. It seemed to me like exactly like what somebody would do. If we randomly pointed, you pretend you're a kid, it would be that, which I was kind of in the middle of. I'm kind of going, is this just intentionally a bad impersonation of a kid to let us know that it's not really, you know, a real condition?
Could they not clear Kanye West in that scene where he's like, I listen to Kanye West, and then she's like, oh, play more Kanye West. And then when he's playing the song and dancing, they can't play Kanye West.
Because I was just like, man, I would have thought they'd use a more recognizably Kanye West song than this.
I was just wondering what Kanye West song that dance obviously syncs up to.
Right.
Hey, I do want to say real quick, I thought that opening scene was electric, and I realized part of the reason it was so electric is because it reminded me so much of my pick. My pick is Utopia. Is it Channel 4 production? It's great. It's good. You should watch it. It's gorgeous and haunting. And I've only watched the first season of it. Second season, I'm told it was good but got canceled. But the first 10 minutes of Utopia will positively electrify you. And much like the beginning of this thing is.
My pick is going to be my new favorite YouTube movie critic, Jenny Nichols, who released a video this week about the problems with character motivations for the main character of this movie, Split, as well as Finding Dory.
That came out. I haven't watched it yet. I'm glad I can now watch that.
Yeah, my biggest issue with Split in general was some of the motivation of the main character. I felt that I'll just say this. The strongest female character in Split is played by James McAvoy. I really like the video, like I like all of her videos. So go ahead and check it out.
She's fantastic. Every time I watch her, she's just funny, on point, and does great stuff. I'm just going to rest on your picks. I'm gonna say what they said.
You know what? I'm going to grab your picks, throw them on the ground, and insist you get Illusion XX, the new book containing all of Andrew Maiden's stuff.
Oh, boy. Thank you very much. I've even uploaded a video about it.
Oh, yeah. By the way, yeah, you did like a 30-minute talk through of it. At first, I thought it was just going to be a trailer, and then you just were talking. I'm like, oh, my God, this is like you gave a lecture of all the stuff in the book.
Yeah, and I asked for questions about illusions and magic, and I answered those too. And so it was like what went, because every book that I wrote on illusion sort of had an approach. The first book, Solo X, was one man illusions, right? Like how you would, you know, the approach towards that illusion effects was easy to build illusions. And then why I wrote each book, what went in, you know, what was it? And then if you're into magic or whatever, it might be kind of informative towards you. And then I answered some questions people that asked me about illusions. So,
hey, all right. Fun. Everybody go buy Illusion XX. And also there's there's another big deal with all the DVDs, right?
Yeah, I do a combo pack where you get Illusion Double X, and then you can get all six of my Illusion DVDs for a. It's a lot. I mean, the book is right now. It's discounted just to $80. I'm selling as the pre-sale. It ships like on the 28th, but it's doing a pre-sale on it, and it's a lot. But I mean, but for what you get is amazing. It's a huge book. You've seen. I don't know where it is right here. I've got it on a tray.
If you are into that kind of stuff and building stuff, then it is a no-brainer. All right,
over 600 pages of magic. So, gentlemen. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.